Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with the unstoppable Tracy Schmidt, who will be telling us a little bit about her disability story. So what can you tell me about it?
Well, hello, Cam. Thank you so much for bringing me on board.
My
you know, it's funny. We often start with the disability first, and I love to sort of say, you know, inducted into the Canada Hall of Fame, and I'm an award-winning athlete and a humanitarian and won business awards and been in 40 countries in my life and over 60 billion viral views of a little kindergarten clip. And so on top of speaking and business and athlete as well, by the way, also a four-way amputee that was born this way, a congenital amputee, meaning I was born this way. Seems a little unusual calling me an amputee because I was born this way, not amputated.
So in that case, who came up with that name for it?
Four-way amputee? I think a while back, it was just started to be written down by doctors and people asking, so what happened to you? It's so funny how people ask what happened to you. It's one of those things where you wouldn't ask somebody that you don't really know, how come you're divorced, right? It's certainly a private question that you should save for family and close friends, and certainly not the way you start a conversation. But it is the simplest way to just say, I was born a four-way amputee, and that there isn't a name. I'm too young to be thalidomide for the explanation, which was a drug that certain people took that had limbs grow shorter. No one else in my family has a disability, just me. So it's how it comes. There's another funny name, phocomelia. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but it means the lack of growth of limbs. But I'm not even sure that my disability fits under that umbrella. So I think because it's a visual description of what I am, it's how it comes up.
So when people do tell you something's impossible or wouldn't be practical for you to try this or that, how do you get around those myths and stereotypes?
You know, that happens almost every day. Like even when I go to a Tim Hortons and I'm a big teetotaler and I order my extra large steep tea. Has to be Tim Hortons because they're the only ones that do the steep tea. And they will say no. They won't hand me the cup that I've just ordered. And, you know, I've got an MBA. Hopefully I'm sounding intelligent enough when I'm ordering my tea. But it also got no with skiing and sailing and my first day in kindergarten. And I think, you know, when the principal said no and oh, my mom counteroffered that day at 5 years old. She, in a very friendly voice, said, how come? And she maintained eye contact with him, and her body language was welcoming. Her voice tone was unjudgmental and not angry. And I learned that day to ask, how come?
Well,
without voice tone, in a friendly way. You know, and not asking why. Because why put people on defense? And yes, we have every right in the world to ask why and maybe be a little bit entitled about it. But the reality is, if we're attempting to influence or persuade or overcome, we need to speak to others' listenings, right? And so my mom spoke to that principal when he said he didn't have the resources in the 70s. And she didn't say Tracy can tie her shoelaces and go to the bathroom by herself. She said, can we just try? If it doesn't work out, no problem. Because he was listening for, I'm going to be stuck. I'm going to be stuck with this girl, and we can't help her. There's one teacher and 30 kids. She can't leave the room with Tracy. And so he wasn't a bad guy. He just thought that, how am I going to go to the bathroom by myself without arms and legs? But my mom didn't say she is independent. She said, can we just try? And if it doesn't work out, no problem. So how do you overcome no is you maintain eye contact and you maintain a friendly demeanor in the beginning and you keep the relationship open and you ask how come and you really listen and you don't counteroffer that it's the right thing to do. You counteroffer what speaks to their listening to get your foot in the door.
That's the thing, though. Too many people get locked into that paradigm of assuming it won't work and never taking any steps to say, let's see if that works. Truth is, people need to overcome what, in my opinion, is the biggest disability of all, which is ignorance.
Yes.
So, how have you managed to modify the equipment for all the various athletic exercises you do?
Well, I'm happy to share how I've modified, but I'd love to start with, just like we jump to the accidental ignorance, and ignorance doesn't have to be a mean word, it just means they don't know, right? And that, so that principal, he said no, N-O, he just didn't know, K-N-O-W. And forevermore after that day, after I tied everybody's shoelaces instead of somebody tying mine, he never said no again. So when you get through those breakthrough conversations, they go from no to they just don't know. And I think in athletic equipment and in people with disabilities, especially now where technology is so fabulous and we're moving forward, we're kind of quick to modify equipment. It's more welcoming. We just don't know. So let's figure out how we're going to modify. And I'd love to start with, we just don't know. Let's give it a try first. Now, I feel very lucky that I learned to sail when there weren't adapted boats. And I learned to kayak when there weren't adapted kayaks as a four-way amputee. Because now I can sail or kayak anything. And you know, when I started sailing, all of the other kids, they all passed that first summer. And because I don't have my legs, every time there's a wave or some wind and the boat would heel, I would fall out of the boat. And so I failed that first summer because I kept falling out of the boat. But I could swim, and I'm wearing a life jacket. And all the kids fell out of the boat at some point. And I knew I could sail. I knew the parts of the boat. I knew the direction of the wind. I could pass all of the sailing bits except stay in the boat. And because I was a child, I just had this resounding belief, I can do it. And when you go into it like, I can do it. Even if you don't know how,
you can
do it. You make it work. And I went back the next summer, and I learned to get my head out of my head and out of the boat and look and see the wind coming. And I learned to balance in the boat without any adaptions that first, second summer. And I caught up, got my weights at level one. I got my weights at level two. And I was doing advanced skills, looking for the wind and getting my head out of the boat and balancing on a heeling boat. So I also got my weights at level 3 and bronze 4 when all the able-bodied kids got their weights at level 1 and 2.
So
when I became competitive, there was adaption. But even then, when I became competitive in the able-bodied world with arms and legs, they boycotted me. They said it's a one-class rule and you can't have adaption. And with those adaptions to your high-performance boat, Tracy, you're not one class. So you can't participate in this World Cup Regatta. And so I think we've got to try to adapt with things that are not going to prevent me from sailing any other boat except for the one I have in Toronto, right? And so there are adaptions. And like in skiing, right, I started with backwards boots. We put my thighs in men's ski boots backwards. And so those boots are available anywhere. And when I got more competitive, it got better. And in para skiing, in the alpine Paralympic world and para sport world, I'm allowed my adapted ski legs. But it started with backwards boots. So how can you adapt in sport with things that are more in your surrounding so that you can participate anywhere with anyone at any time to start?
Usually the best solution is the one coming out of the simplest place.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
This next segment of our show, we'll hear from Linda Monteith Gardiner about Bell Let's Talk Day. So tell me a little bit about Bell Let's Talk Day and the potential benefit for those affected with schizophrenia.
Okay, well, Bell Let's Talk Day, I think, has done wonders for bringing mental illness into the mainstream conversation, especially people who have depression and anxiety. Unfortunately, psychosis not so much, which, you know, you find in illnesses like schizophrenia. But I think more and more, because of what Bell at Talk has done, which is A, talk, so get people talking about this, but B, they heard us when we say, you know, enough talk, let's have some action. Because I know that this year their slogan is every action counts. And I think it's what you as individuals can do. Now, I think there needs to be a whole lot of other stuff that goes on, like government funding and so on. So, but it really is still an issue around psychosis, which I think is largely misunderstood by the general public. You know, it means that you have a departure from reality, but it doesn't mean, you know, unfortunately, we've had movies like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho and other movies where the, you know, there's a deranged killer who is psychotic kind of thing.
So
so that's unfortunate, yeah.
So I'm wondering, when you mentioned the need for a call to action, what sorts of things would you hope to see?
More frontline services. I know people who are desperate to see a psychiatrist and are either on a really long waiting list or told, you know, the waiting list is closed. So frontline services, definitely, for all ages.
So in terms of psychoses like schizophrenia, do you know approximately how many people are affected and why this is such a major need?
Well, I think for schizophrenia, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 1% of the population. But it can be a serious problem, especially if it's not treated early and well. It turns into a lifelong struggle. And so, now, about 1 in 5 Canadians will have a mental illness, but as I say, only about 1% will have schizophrenia, as far as I know.
So,
yeah.
What are some of the major impacts that schizophrenia can have on a person?
Well, there are things like, for example, some people have hallucinations and delusions. I myself have them. And some people have, you know, what's called a lack of affect. So their faces don't really show emotion. They can withdraw and tend to isolate. And it just makes it worse. It makes the illness worse when you do that, of course. Because having support, support of family, support of community, I think is part of healing from these illnesses.
So you mentioned you yourself have experienced this.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what it's like when something like that sets in?
Well, for many years, I didn't understand that it was psychosis. I just thought it was part of me, who I was. I have things like, I believe there are cameras that watch me at all times. And that can be very uncomfortable. But I always feel that I'm being monitored. I don't currently have this, but I have had a situation where when I looked at certain people, their heads would turn to skulls, and I thought to myself, well, I have the special power to know who's going to die. Fortunately, that resolved, and I no longer have that. But, you know, it's a departure from reality, but not necessarily, you know, a violent departure from reality.
So, if you could send any message to the community about what needs to happen going forward, what would you say?
I would say, let's stop and talk about psychosis. Let's put it on the table and become clear as to what it is. So, yeah, we've done this with the depression and anxiety to a great extent, and I think that's great. I did a public speaking event at a girls' private school with the junior school, JK to grade 6. And those kids had the vocabulary to describe their feelings and what was going on inside and the permission to do that. So I think that's part of it. There has to be more support from the community members around the psychotic illnesses, because you know, I've been in hospital many times for psychiatric reasons, and people don't send us flowers or get well cards or support our families. Nobody's out there running marathons for us. And I think that kind of thing has to start happening, that people aren't, you know, ashamed by a connection with someone who has a psychotic illness. But yeah, that's what I would say.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about volunteering with CJAM FM? Why haven't you? Volunteering isn't limited to students. Anyone from the community can come into the station and start their very own program. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So get involved right here in your community with a topical spoken word show or music program where you choose the content. Email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located on the University of Windsor campus in the basement of the CAW Student Center. Find out more information about how you can volunteer at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Unstoppable Tracy Schmidt and from Linda Monteith Gardinet. This next interview, my friends, is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. This next segment of our show, we'll hear from Julie Brenneiser, who'll be giving us an update about Gorlin syndrome. So what's the latest happening with the work on Gorlin syndrome?
There's lots going on with Gorlin syndrome for 2020. The Gorlin Syndrome Alliance is sponsoring 4 one-day regional patient meetings. The first one will be in Phoenix on Saturday, February 8th. Then there will be one in June in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and hopefully another one later in June in Washington, D.C. And the fourth for the year will be in Los Angeles, close to the Los Angeles airport, most likely the first weekend in October, but we are adjusting that date for a variety of reasons.
So,
and we're also very excited about some upcoming clinical trials for our members to participate in, and those will be, one is ongoing and a couple of others will be starting later this year. And one of them in particular is exciting because it will be available to, most likely will be available to teenagers. That's our hope.
So what do you hope to accomplish with all the conferences and bringing these minds together?
What I hope to accomplish is a couple of things. The meetings are primarily for patients who are affected with Gorlin syndrome and their families. So getting people together who share a rare disease is a really unique opportunity because face-to-face, there are so few of us in the United States that we don't get to see one another and talk to one another about our problems and our struggles and our challenges, our burdens, and also the good things. The conference, the member meetings will also allow those who attend to hear lectures from physicians who care for one of the variety of manifestations that we might have, and also lectures by researchers and pharmaceutical companies who are interested in our problems.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with the syndrome, can you tell me a little bit about how it affects people?
Sure. Gorlin syndrome is a rare genetic disorder, and the most common manifestation for adults is basal cell skin cancers. And we can get them by the hundreds in a year. And they occur in sun-exposed and non-sun-exposed areas. The other manifestations that are a problem or a challenge for us are cysts in the jaw, ovarian cysts for women, and unfortunately, the syndrome can manifest itself in every organ system. In little babies, they are slightly more prone to malignant brain tumors, and one of the challenges there is that they may not be diagnosed with Gorlin syndrome. They'll have a number of CAT scans of their heads, and that will that ionizing radiation in a CAT scan induces the growth of basal cell skin cancers later in their young lives, just the way fertilizer helps a garden grow. So again, it can manifest itself in every organ system, but the most common manifestation is basal cell carcinoma.
So are there presently any treatments available specifically for Gorlin?
There are treatments for each of the different manifestations, but there is not a single treatment for all of the manifestations. So as they develop, one has to see a variety of different doctors, a dermatologist, a dermatologic surgeon, oral surgeon because of the jaw cyst. Women need to be followed regularly by a gynecologist. Babies need to be monitored for brain tumors. Geneticists need to be involved if the individual is considering having children, and also a baseline ultrasound of the heart needs to be done because another of the most challenging manifestations are tumors of the heart that lay on the heart muscle.
So how does the Alliance go about providing support to those affected?
We provide support in a number of ways. For those affected, we have a Facebook page and several Facebook groups, and those are very active. Affected people or parents will post a question, and the responses are numerous, helping those individuals. So we have those Facebook groups. We provide support through these member meetings. We provide support with individual contact with patients and caregivers. And we also provide support with webinars. We started doing those in the last half of 2019, and our first one is planned for a couple of weeks from now, for this year, with Dr. Jim Swift, an oral surgeon from Minneapolis. So those are great interactive ways for people to ask questions.
So what sorts of questions do you most commonly hear about the syndrome?
Questions are quite broad, really. For new parents, questions, there are a lot of questions about what do I face in, or what does my child face in the future? What do I need to do to monitor my child or myself for the various manifestations that can develop? They're looking for a protocol for care for themselves or their child, which we provide on our website. And those are the how to treat basal cells, how to manage sun protection. And one of the things that we try to encourage is that people, it is possible to live a fulfilling life within the constraints of Gorlin syndrome. And we hope that people will not restrict their children, but be wise about sun exposure, using sunscreen and sun protective clothing, and that sort of thing.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, I want to speak to one of the key issues that I was thinking about during Linda's interview earlier in the show, when she described what it's like being a person with schizophrenia and losing touch with reality, what it's like just to need to be counted as a person with a disability. She thinks there needs to be more frontline action, more discussion openly about such matters. I could not agree more, my friends. For the fact is, no matter what a person with a disability has that makes them who and what they are, doesn't mean they're any more or less entitled to consideration, respect. Truth is, we're not going to get anywhere in our understanding. We're not going to build those bridges unless we take the time to hear the words of others. And that does not mean you talk around them, you talk over them, you sit there texting when they're trying to say something of importance. For these are intelligent, decent, hardworking people with hopes, dreams, goals, all their own. And we as a people have no right to say that anyone's voice should not be counted. Whether it be a question of our thinking they don't have enough education or enough awareness, fact is, there's really a gem in every person. There's a little nugget of wisdom that we can all profit by. And if we're not taking the time to see it, if we're not allowing ourselves that basic decency, that basic respect, then we're just denying ourselves an opportunity. For the fact is, they did not choose to be what they are, but what they can do is work with their abilities. They can understand, this is my gift to the world, and this is how I choose to express it. Nobody gets to choose their own constitution, my friends. But the fact is, we are all a gift to one another. We are all entitled to that basic decency, that basic respect. That is what ties us all together as people. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.